Wow. An EMP, huh?
Three of them. But Jesus will protect us. This is going to change things around here, David. I've never seen Simon so focused. It's really happening.
Simon Moses stood at the tunnel's inner gate, fumbling with keys. Barth had locked the massive barred entrance yesterday, effectively cutting off Eden from the outside world. But Simon had to be sure that all was in order. He had to know because he knew what none of them possibly could. All except for Smith. Smith might know. And if Smith knew... He found the key and glanced at his watch. 5:03. An hour. He had to hurry. With a quick twist of the key, the titanium lock fell open. Two steps to the control panel. The gates rumbled when he hit the large red button with his palm. Power was still on. That was good. He hurried back to his Dodge Ram, climbed in, shoved the stick into drive, and took the truck through the opening gate and into the dark tunnel. It had taken them a month to blast the 70 yards through this cursed cliff. Another 7 months to lay the two-lane road that snaked its way into the valley behind him. Even without gates, Eden was secured from the outside world by its isolation alone. A long line of yellow lights along the ceiling cast an amber glow on the asphalt road. He'd always known that a day might come when the whole thing came down. That was part of the deal. But the speed of the developments over the last few days had taken him by surprise. Worse was the sudden appearance of a man who didn't fit into the equation. Vlad Smith was either working with the benefactors or against them. There was no way his insertion into Eden was a matter of coincidence. Following the girl's question yesterday, whether something was wrong with Eden, Simon had broken protocol and made an attempt to reach the benefactors from his bunker. No answer. This in itself wasn't necessarily a problem. The scheduled call was always on Saturday. Today. But when he'd been unable to establish contact at 9 o'clock this morning, his concern gave way to fear. For the first time in almost 2 decades, Eden was completely out of contact with the outside world. He exited the tunnel, eyes on the valley thick with trees beyond Eden. The road rounded a bend and ran through the main control building 100 yards farther. Anyone entering or leaving the valley had to pass through the large structure and its heavy steel doors, operated by a switch in its control room. Like the rest of Eden, the gatehouse was powered by the hydroelectric plant, with two backups at the north end of the valley. Loss of electricity would never be their problem. Beyond the gatehouse, the rest of the world. Deep inside the gatehouse, a control room known only to him. A failsafe with redundant communication lines to the outside world. He slid the stick into park, stepped out, and approached the gatehouse. Using a key, he opened the door that led into the control center, entered and flipped on the overhead lights, scanned the room. At first glance, the panel looked in order. It had 4 lights, red or green, 2 of which were now green. Open. That would be the tunnel gates he'd just passed through. The 3rd was red. The large steel doors. The last light was for the titanium door to his right, which led into the 2nd control room, which only he had access to. Simon crossed to the door and quickly entered his 9-digit code into the panel that operated the locks, expecting the familiar clunk when the internal latch disengaged. Only there was no clunk. He drew his sleeve over his forehead to clear the sweat. Focused, and tried again. Same result. Had the benefactors reset the code? Or had a surge fried it? couldn't be a surge. The circuits operated on a protected loop. He tried a third time, deliberately entering each number as he spoke them aloud. The lock remained engaged. A chill washed down his back. How was this possible? Without access to the chambers behind this door, had they cut him off? The questions boomed through his mind like a cluster bomb. Above them all, one thought. Vlad Smith. A soft, barely audible chirp from behind him cut through the stillness. He spun. Silence. But he'd heard that chirp. Or had he? Sweat now coursing down his face, he glanced at his watch again. 5:14. He had to get back, collect his thoughts, and lead them as he always had. Far too much depended on the role he played in Eden. Without him, the town would collapse, with or without the grid failure. Simon slapped the door, grunting. He was halfway across the room when the chirp came again. He froze. The sound had come from down low, under the metal tabletop that housed the control panel. Two strides, and he was there, dropping to one knee and peering under the tabletop. One look, and he saw the small black box with the tiny red light winking at him. His heart thudded into his gut. A handwritten note on yellow notepad paper was taped to the concrete wall. Open the main gate, and the whole thing blows. Enter the chambers, and the whole thing blows bigger. Cut or remove any wire, and the whole thing blows like a neutron star. V.S. Blood drained from Simon's face. The entrance was booby-trapped. From the inside. V.S. Vlad Smith. But was he working with the benefactors, or had he entered the valley on his own? It had to be the former. How else could he know so much? Either way, there was a new player in town, and Simon's lifeline to the outside had been cut off. A test? Or the result of a failure? Like the grid failure. Problem was, Simon didn't know whether he should kiss Smith's feet or blow his head off. He stood, closed his hand to steady his fingers. Dear God. Chapter 13. I stared at the words Peter had scrawled in the dirt at our feet. What begins as white that man has made black? With a stick I scratched a circle into the soil surrounding them. Somehow my reading of the words in Vlad's book of history had opened my mind to the meaning of words and letters, not only in that book, but everywhere. I could only guess that I could read in my dream world, too. Peter had learned from my father where I was and sought me out. I decided then that I would share the seals with him and him alone, for now. Why him? Why now? Maybe because after my encounter with Vlad, I wanted someone in Eden to believe me. We'd spent the last few hours under the large maple tree at the pasture's south side. The four horses feeding on tufts of grass 30 feet away had no concern other than filling their bellies. I, however, did have other concerns, like filling my mind with the right thoughts, and it wasn't going so well. "Maybe you're right," Peter said, leaning back on one elbow, absently chewing on a soft reed. "You think the answer is Eden?" He shrugged. "That Smith guy said there was something wrong with Eden. My father's dream has always been a kind of utopia here. That's white. And now Smith intends to destroy his vision. That's black. I frowned.
Maybe. I just keep thinking that the image I saw in the book of history was the seal.
He was looking at me with those inquisitive eyes of his, topped by long lashes. His dark brown hair was unkempt, but the daisy I'd slid over his ear was still in place. There was a lot about Peter Moses I wouldn't have guessed, like the fact that he would believe my stories of dreaming in two worlds. Of course, his judgment might be affected by his interest in me, but I didn't mind that either. It felt good to be liked.
Then you already found it, but nothing happened.
I know. So I obviously didn't find anything other than a riddle, which makes sense. Justin called them seals of truth. So then maybe they aren't physical objects, but, well, truth.
So then what? You solve this riddle and poof, you have the seal? That doesn't sound right.
I know.
And you have to find 5 of them before some random appointed time or you fail?
Something like that.
Actually, the seals kind of sound like the treasure in the field.
The parable? I said. The one about the man who sold all he had to buy the field the treasure was in? It cost him everything.
Simon taught that the treasure was both a place like Eden and the truth, which was the law.
Exactly.
The kingdom is within you, I said.
What do you mean?
That's what the Gospels say. Maybe the treasure is in me.
Does finding the seals affect this world? Or is that just part of your dream world?
Peter asked.
In Other Earth.
We'd started calling it Other Earth to simplify matters.
Both, but maybe not in the same way.
I just couldn't understand how I, a girl who'd essentially been born blind in a town in Utah, could possibly play any role in vanquishing the shadow of death in Eden, much less the rest of the world. Or in Other Earth.
He sighed.
Or maybe the riddle really is only about the grit failure, like we said. White is power, and black is loss of power.
Maybe. But I didn't really believe that either. Maybe they're all just symbols or mirrors of the same thing.
I dropped to my back and spread my arms, facing the dimming sky. Dark clouds were rolling in from the west, but half of the sky was still blue. A brilliant blue, bluer than the desert world's sky. Less atmosphere up here at 6,000 feet in elevation. The desert was probably at sea level. I hadn't told Peter about my catching of the apple, or the fighting skills I evidently had in Other Earth. I wanted to. Who wouldn't want to say they just woke up and discovered they were from another reality and had mad ninja skills? But I couldn't bring myself to tell him. Because those skills, like the tattoo on my arm, made me feel distant from him. Like I was an alien, and he was a human. Telling him about the 5 seals had stretched him enough. I hadn't told him about Talia and his lion either, or Samuel's affection for me.
And how did I feel about Samuel?
"I'm a mystic," I whispered, watching dark clouds beyond the swaying leaves.
"I can live with that," Peter said. "The whole world's wrapped in mystery. Sometimes I think my father's only goal in life is to strip it all away and become his own god."
See, that was an insight I wouldn't have expected from Peter.
I turned my head and saw that, leaning back on one elbow, he was above me now.
"A mystic is someone who believes that God is infinite," I said.
"Really? Doesn't everyone believe that?"
"Evidently not."
My stomach was in knots,
The dread I'd felt this morning had eased a bit when Peter found me, then returned after hours of talking through Seals and Rausch and Shatiki and Vlad Smith without making any more sense of it. I didn't want to be anyone special. I certainly didn't want anyone's future to depend on me. I just wanted to be a normal girl who could see like everyone else and could now discover the beauty of a whole new world in a whole new way. I shifted my head to a more natural position.
Tell me about your father. Not the judge, but who he is as a dad.
He stared off at the cliffs. My father's always been sure of himself. Never seen anyone more focused or, in some ways, so demanding. But he's also fair. Never laid a finger on me, except when I deserved it.
He's beaten you?
Sure, but I learned long ago not to cross the line. I haven't seen that side of him for a while. You just follow his rules and all is smooth. There's the law, and he's the judge. I can't even remember the last time I broke his rules. I gazed into his bright eyes.
What about now?
Looking into someone's eyes was the most breathtaking part of being able to see, I thought, like staring into another galaxy. Part of me wanted to crawl inside of them.
Being here with you?
He was blushing.
I'm not exactly courting you, am I? Now, if I did this...
He traced my palm with his finger.
An argument could be made that I was.
Lifted his finger.
But I'm not.
Well, maybe you should,
I said, then immediately regretted opening my mouth. Before he could respond, I withdrew my hand and rested my head on it, eyes turned back to the sky.
Or maybe you shouldn't.
I guess I would need approval from the council. But I'm not sure my father would...
The council meeting, I cried, sitting up. What time is it?
He straightened, grabbed the iPhone from his pocket, pushed the home button.
Crap.
He was all arms and legs, struggling to his feet.
Crap, crap, crap. He's gonna kill me.
Enough said. We were both on our feet and running down the path.
I'm sorry, this is my fault, I said.
No, no, it's mine. I just... Don't worry about it, just run.
We ran. I knew that the meeting was mandatory. I also knew that failing to meet any mandatory requirement couldn't go unpunished. At the very least, isolation for 24 hours for some soul-searching. Worst case, corporal punishment. But that was rare. I was aware of only 3 instances of public beatings. What happened behind closed doors was another matter. Peter had gone from sweet, flirting teenager to terrified child in the space of 3 breaths. My fault. It took us less than 10 minutes at a fast jog to reach the center of town. No people in the square, not even a dog or cat. Only cars and trucks, lots of them, lining the streets. Dusk had settled quickly, graying the sky with each passing minute as we ran.
What time is it?
I asked, panting hard.
6:20.
His voice was thin and his face was pale. We were 20 minutes late. Thoughts of Seals and Smith and Talia and Justin had been pushed clean out of my mind by the time we hurried up the steps and slipped into the foyer of the church. There were 3 doors leading into the back of the auditorium, one that opened to the center aisle, 2 that opened to either side. Peter veered to his right and motioned for me to split to the far side. Of course, we couldn't be seen entering together. I watched him run up to the door, and quiet as a feather, slipped into the sanctuary. But I held back. Entering through 2 doors at the same time would look as bad as walking in the same one together. Worse, like we were trying to hide the fact we'd been together. So I hung back and paced,
listening to the muted sounds of Simon's booming voice over the PA inside.
"It's the only way to protect what we've built here," Simon was saying.
There was a desperate edge to his tone.
"I know this may sound extreme to some of you, but Jesus was very clear when he told us to take up the sword. He came to divide, not unite. And we are that division, my friends, separated from the world. He said, run to the hills. We ran to the hills. He said to prepare for the worst. We've done that, and more. And now we heed his call to take up arms and protect ourselves."
I can imagine them now, 150 faithful seated with rapt attention, trusting the one who'd created their secure world here in Eden. The council would be seated on the platform. Linda Loving, Maxwell Emerson, and Barth Caldwell. Their families, along with Simon's, would be on the front row, nodding respectfully. Then the other founding residents, and behind them, those who'd come into the valley after it was established. Like my father, who always sat with Miranda on the last row, for my sake more than his own. Peter would have had to walk all the way to the front. Visions of him being beaten flashed through my mind. Surely Simon wouldn't go that far with his own son. I paced and wiped the sweat from my brow as someone, Cindy Jarvis, by the sound of her faint voice, expressed some concern.
"Forgive me for asking, and I'm sure it's just me, but do you really see them coming over the cliffs? I mean, we really need snipers?"
A short pause, and then Simon's response, dripping with condescension.
"Why, yes, Cindy, I do. Or I wouldn't have said as much. Do you not understand what an EMP can do to a society?"
I could hear him walking on the platform, imagine him drilling her with a stare. Today's attacks over Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Salt Lake City are only the beginning. Whoever's behind this began with limited attacks in the Northeast, just enough to compromise our government's emergency responders. Then they deployed EMPs over several strategic western cities. Suffice it to say, the United States is crippled in a way few could have imagined, even if there are no more attacks. Life, as all Americans have known it, is now officially finished. It'll take them years to recover. But not us. God has given us a valley of refuge. Silence gripped his audience.
"Tell me, wouldn't you protect what God has given you with the same ferocity he would?"
No answer was required. The judge continued.
"They will come. In one day, one week, or one month, they will come. And when they do, we will be ready. The first leg over the lip of those cliffs gets a bullet in it. By Utah law, and I do abide by that law, we are fully in our rights to defend against any trespasser."
After a short pause, someone asked about cell phones. But Simon shut him down quickly. The cell tower that serviced the valley was offline. All communications in and out of the valley were offline, including all satellite transmissions. Eden was completely and, until further notice, irrevocably cut off from the outside world, which was our only saving grace.
"Think of yourselves as in the world, but not of it," he said. "Any attempt to leave or communicate with that world will be met with the harshest consequence."
It was worse than I'd realized. The whole country was falling apart around this little paradise of ours. But something was wrong in this paradise, and I was sure that Simon knew it. He was speaking boldly, but his tone was soaked in insecurity. Slowly my hard breathing settled. There was no way to get in without being seen, no way to pretend my tardiness and Peter's weren't somehow connected,
No way I would lie if they questioned me. Better to just slip in beside my father and be done with it. I grasped the handle, took one last deep breath, and opened the door to the center aisle. I'd intended to keep my head down and walk straight to my father, who was seated in the last pew. But I looked up as I entered, and what I saw stopped me. It was the first time I'd actually seen the sanctuary with my eyes. I knew every nook and cranny through echolocation sight, yes, but actually seeing the platform from this viewpoint and in full color took my breath away. Simon, dressed in a black judge's robe trimmed in gold, stood at the podium built into a judge's bench. The other three council members were seated behind him in high-backed chairs, upholstered with deep red fabric. On either side of the long judge's bench, two sculpted marble pillars reached to a domed ceiling. The sides of the platform were framed by long purple velvet drapes. Simplicity and plain living were things Eden prided itself on, but not in this sanctuary. It was both beautiful and intimidating. But that's not what stopped me. It was the large, round, backlit image of God etched into stained glass on the wall behind them. A stern, bearded man held the scales of justice. He wasn't wearing a blindfold, like the lady in the traditional images, and he was staring directly at me. Justice might be blind, but God was not. With his free hand, God was pointing a long finger down to a Bible that had been fixed to a pedestal on the wall below the stained glass. I shifted my eyes back up to the image of God and shivered as a thousand fears surfaced. My father had once told me that you could get that big black book to say anything if you tortured it long enough. And I suppose he was right, but I'd always chosen to believe what Simon insisted it said. Anyone who doesn't comply with even the most benign law in Eden will be sequestered. Simon was staring at me as he spoke, and others turned their heads to see who he was looking at, including Peter, who'd taken his place next to his sister, Karina, on the front row. I had taken one step toward my father when the lights went out. All of them. There were no windows. The room was pitch dark. Eden had just lost its power. Cries of alarm filled the room. Simon was urging calm, and Barth was shouting them all down. "Everyone remain seated. Do not move." My hearing quickly picked up my father's voice. "Rochelle?" I stood fixed to the carpet, clicking and seeing the shapes of at least a dozen people standing, including my father, 10 paces ahead on the last pew. "Let there be light." A voice boomed from the stage. The lights suddenly popped on, illuminating the auditorium. With the coming of that light, a hush. And in that hush stood Vlad Smith. Dressed in the same white jacket, legs spread wide, hands in his pockets. Every eye turned to look at the man who stood on the right side of the stage. His were directed at me. No one moved. "I have come to bring sight to the blind and set the captives free." Barth Caldwell palmed a gun from his waist and leveled it at the man. Vlad slowly turned his head toward the security man. "Really, Barth? You really want to go there?" Barth looked like he did. Simon looked like he'd been gut-punched. He slowly lifted a hand to his second in command, but Barth kept his weapon trained on Vlad Smith. The lights went out again. Black. A momentary flash and crack from a gunshot punctuated the darkness. I instinctively ducked. Barth fired his weapon 2 more times in rapid succession. Then nothing but darkness. No one was yelling. They were too shocked, I thought. First, the power failure. Now, gunshots. 2 firsts in the hallowed sanctuary. With a loud snap, light once again filled the room. Half the residents were now on their feet. Vlad hadn't moved except to raise one hand and snap his fingers. He was still staring directly at me, like a viper, unblinking. "You see?" he said. "I give and I take. And in the world of polarity, that which is given must be taken. What you will quickly realize, every single last one of you, is that, for all practical purposes, I am now your god. So if you want any power in Eden, I strongly suggest you take a deep breath and put the weapon down before I cram it down your throat." "Put it away," Simon said, voice thin. This time, Barth complied. "Attaboy." Vlad's gaze swept the auditorium. "As I'm sure you've all heard by now, yesterday I brought sight to blind eyes. A sign so you would know my power. Today I show you I can just as easily take sight away." He withdrew his other hand from his pocket and held up a small gray device between his thumb and forefinger. "Do you know what this is? Hmm?" He showed it to both sides of the room. "No? It's a transmitter with 2 buttons. One of them cuts off the power from the hydro. The other blows it up. I have 4 more just like it. And in the event someone gets the bright idea to off me so they can take possession of my little toys, the whole town goes up in smoke. Take my word for it." Someone to my right dropped a hymnal. No one seemed to notice. "I'm glad we have that out of the way," Vlad said, sliding the device back into his pocket. He turned to the council members, who were all on their feet. "Leave my stage." Each glanced at Simon, who hesitated, then nodded. They filed off the platform. Lastly, Barth, who glared at Vlad all the way. To the rest of us, sit. I was still there at the back of the sanctuary, frozen in place. Part of my brain was telling me to run. But the reasoning part told me running would end badly. I had taken 2 steps toward my father when Vlad's voice stopped me. "Not you. You stay exactly where you are. I want them all to understand how and why this is all you're doing." My father was back on his feet. "Sit." Vlad's tone carried a crushing authority. Then it softened. "Please, David. Let me do my job. You and I have work to do. But your wife's body isn't going anywhere just yet. Sit." My father looked confused, but he slowly sat back down. Everyone had taken a seat, leaving Vlad Smith alone on the stage and me alone in the aisle. "Good." Vlad walked to the center of the stage, measuring his audience with steady eyes. "Very good." He picked up a wooden gavel from the podium and slammed it down. "Court is in session." He tossed it back onto the bench. "In short order, you, not I, will deliver a verdict based upon all the evidence I intend to present to you. You are the jury, and I am your judge. We know that this god you think you understand is the final judge, and I'm not him. But as of now, I will do the speaking for him. Can I get an amen?" No one spoke. Like me, they probably couldn't have, even if they wanted to. "Please, just one, so I know you're listening." "Amen," Cindy said. A soft chorus of amens quickly followed. "Excellent. The jury has spoken. The next time, all of you, please.
It's hard to explain how I felt in that moment. Inside, I was shaking all over, terrified of being alone and vulnerable in that aisle, while Shadow Man strutted across the platform, weaving his spell over them all. But part of me was remembering Justin and Talia and my other self from other Earth. Those voices told me to stand there and let him say whatever he wanted to say. Those voices were asking, "What begins as white that man has made black?" Over and over, like a skipping record. Vlad folded his arms, leaned back on the judge's bench, and crossed his legs.
First, some background, which, however philosophical, is crucial for all tissue tops. We must break through those thick skulls that protect that mush in there. You've all been brainwashed, every single one of you. That much will be plain soon enough. But I'm going to give you a head start today. It's time to set the record straight.
His lips were flat and his eyes deadpan.
There are those among the human race called mystics who know that God is infinite.
The familiar words crashed through my skull.
These mystics say that God is infinitely powerful, infinitely complete, infinitely knowing, infinitely present, and infinitely loving. And what is infinite cannot be compromised by what is finite. Does the jury agree?
A few amens were quickly joined by many more. Vlad lowered his arms and stood tall.
They ask, if a finite little pitbull like Barth here was to come upon a being who was infinitely more powerful than that little ferocious thing,
he pointed to the gun at Barth's waist,
would the infinite being cower in fear? Of course not, the mystics say, because no finite pitbull, regardless of how ferocious he thinks he is, can threaten a being that is infinite. Correct?
A ripple of tentative agreements, though most were undoubtedly balking at his reference to Barth.
These mystics say that this infinite god of theirs created all that exists, including time and space, and that, as the creator of time and space, he's not bound by it. He knows everything that has happened and ever will happen. Nothing can surprise such an infinite being. He doesn't wake up one morning and say, "Crap, I didn't see that coming. I'm so disappointed."
And I was a mystic in other Earth, I thought. Here as well. But one who was standing there dressed in jeans with my arms hanging limp at my sides, feeling as vulnerable as a sheared lamb. Vlad shoved a hand back into his pocket and walked slowly to his left.
Follow me here, because it's important. Would such an infinite being ever fear anything? No. Does he ever feel insecure or upset? Does he worry that something might go wrong with his plans? No, because there is no finite power that can possibly undermine or compromise his intentions in any way. Ever. The pitbull might have his free will, but no will of any finite creature can cause a problem for an infinite being who can't be compromised.
His voice rang out across the auditorium. A few more amens piped up, but he continued over them.
God is infinitely secure, the mystics say. Would such a being ever need to defend himself against an enemy that poses no threat to his invulnerability? Any defense would only recognize and honor the pitbull's non-existent power to threaten him. These mystics say that humans have problems, but God does not. Having problems, most humans, regardless of their religion, can't fathom the true, infinite nature of God, because they've made God in their own image, a God with problems like theirs. Can I get a true, full-blooded amen?
Amen. But there were only a few, just following Vlad's orders. This wasn't the God Simon had taught us about. I'd always assumed God had problems, big ones. But hearing Vlad, I wondered if he was speaking truth about what mystics believed, even though it went against everything I had ever learned.
"That's what the mystics believe," Vlad drilled me with his gaze. "But the mystics are wrong."
He was saying all this for my sake more than the others, determined to get under my skin. And it was working. I was suddenly fearing myself, my beliefs and my identity, as much as I was fearing Vlad.
"We, my friends, know if that kind of God exists, the mystics would be right. God would have no problems. But we're smart enough to know that God has many very big problems, and he's upset about those problems, just like you and I are. Therefore, God cannot be infinite."
I stood perfectly still, gripped by fear. He was now describing the God I had always believed in, even though I said he was infinite. Could I have been wrong this whole time? Or were the mystics wrong? Something gentle and warm settled over me the moment that thought crossed my mind, like a breath offering me comfort.
"For starters, God lives in fear that he might lose you, his precious children. Something has indeed gone terribly wrong with his plan, and he now depends on you to accept his fix, or all hell will break out for you. Literally. In fact, it already has. If you threaten one of his children, he will scream with rage. If you curse his name, he will slap you silly. If you pluck out the eye of one of his offspring, he will allow the devil to pluck out your eye. If you run away, he will wring his hands in worry, hoping you won't be stolen by his enemy, because if you are, only you can save yourself by believing the right thing. He's a god of law, and that law says the fate of his creation, including you, is in your hands now."
My mind was racing. His last statement about our responsibility in life triggered my memory of Justin's words.
"Find the five seals for yourself, 49th. When you do, you will know your origin, and you will recognize yourself."
"This is the God of Eden." Vlad pointed at the council, drawing his finger down the row. "This is the God of law you all worship. The law, my friends, is the sword that you live and die by. It is your accuser and keeps your path straight. You need the law like you need the air to breathe. God fears, and so must you, because your terror of God only mirrors his fear of losing you. If the source from which you come fears loss, how much more should you? We have no choice but to protect ourselves from the pit bull, because it's strong enough to threaten God."
Betsy Williamson, who often saw my father for stress due to a surplus of fears stemming from an abandoned childhood, was on her feet, waving a Bible in her old hand.
"That's right. You tell it straight, preacher."
Her arm was covered in a red rash. So was her neck. John Baxter shouted his endorsement. Then many others followed suit. This was Simon's gospel. A part of me joined in with them, because this was what I had grown up learning. I stood there, fractured. But another part of me was feeling that breath that flowed over me like a breeze now, calming my mind. Something was going to happen. I could feel it. Something was already happening. "What begins as white that man has made black?
Find the seals. When you do, you will know your origin and yourself."
"The jury has spoken. I must say, you've been programmed so well."
Vlad touched his tongue and marked the air with his finger.
"Score one for the tissue tops. Amen?
Amen."
The warm breeze was stronger now, caressing my hair. Something was happening, but only I seemed to notice it. The rest were oblivious to the flow of power that was sweeping over me.
All your life you've followed what Simon says. Simon says, and you believe, and that's what protects you. I hope you now all understand why it's so important for you to follow the laws that Simon says, and why you will forgive Barth for enforcing those laws. The whole world is falling apart out there, and Eden will suffer the same fate unless you follow every single jot and tittle. Vlad shoved his hands into his pockets and walked back to the center of the stage. Unfortunately for Simon, I now control much more than the grid in this valley. What used to be Simon says is now Vlad Smith says. Otherwise, every single last one of you will perish. His words reached me as if spoken from a distant hole. What begins as white that man has made black? When you find the seals, you will have found your origin. As the new judge in Eden, I wish to put my flock to a simple test, just to see if you understand the consequences of breaking God's laws, which are now my laws.
The seal is a truth.
That test will be asked of one girl, who is far more powerful than any of you can possibly understand. You know her as Rachel.
He reached his hand toward me, palm up.
The girl to whom I gave sight yesterday.
They were looking at me. I knew that. But I was somewhere else. It could have been in my mind's eye, but I was back in the desert, facing Justin, who had just given me a stone to hold.
The hot sun warmed my skin. His bright green eyes smiled at me, then turned down to my arm. I saw that my veins were filled with light. That light was my fabric, my source. Without it, the stone in my hand would grow too heavy to bear.
"Look to the light," I heard Justin say. "Don't be afraid of the shadow it creates. Remember. Return to the truth of your origin and recognize yourself."
With those words, I knew what the first seal was. Like a tsunami, the truth crashed over me, and immediately tears filled my eyes and slipped down my cheeks as I stood there, caught up in another world. All my life I had lived in the regret of believing I disappointed my father, God, the one who made me. All my life I had lived in fear of the consequences for my failure. But I had been blind, blind to his infinite power, blind to his unthreatened love. A knot filled my throat, and I could hardly breathe as my tears flowed there in the desert in front of Justin. But I knew now. I knew the first seal, and I opened my eyes, expecting to see him and tell him I had found it. Then I would throw my arms around him. Instead, I found myself staring at the platform. I blinked to clear my sight. Vlad was holding up the same book of history he'd shown my father and me that morning. Behind him, that stained glass with the god of law, made in man's image, loomed over us like an idol. And the Bible below Vlad's god? It could not, in the end, point to anything but an infinite god who couldn't fear any loss or be threatened in any way. Vlad looked slightly amused by my show of emotion, but he continued whatever he'd been saying.
And she refused. Just a few words in a harmless old book. You would think a girl who owes me her life would be thrilled to show her gratitude.
My feet were moving already. I walked without fear, one foot in front of the other, drawn by the book of history, drawn because I knew it had something to show me.
My uninvited approach stalled Vlad for a second, but he took it in stride. So now I will make myself clearer. If the one I healed refuses to write
what I've asked her to write in this book, then I will throw you all into darkness. If she still refuses, then there will be harsher consequences. This I have spoken. This is now the law. Voices peppered the auditorium as I walked, urging me to write. Vlad had said his piece. Everyone thought they knew the stakes, but they couldn't possibly know what I did. My father whispered a warning as I passed him, but I walked by without looking. Vlad Smith let me come, but I didn't pay him any mind either. I had to get to that book. A hush fell over the room when I reached the steps. I could hear Vlad's steady breathing when I set my foot on the platform. I could feel his stare as I walked up to him, refusing to look him in the eyes. Look to the light. Don't be afraid of the shadow it creates. Remember. Return to the truth of your origin. The book, I said, holding out my hand. He hesitated, then set the book on the podium, and next to it, a pen. I now knew his purpose here. He needed me, the 49th, to write him into Other Earth, which was a very bad idea. I had no intention of writing what he wanted me to write. I was thinking about the page I'd seen earlier, the one with the white circle, the emblem that neither Vlad nor my father could see. As if in a dream, I reached out, touched the book, felt the ripple of power flowing up my arm like the light I'd felt in my veins. The room behind me went dead silent. I slowly opened the cover and peeled back 4 pages to the one that had been smeared with blood. My blood. And there, below the blood, the emblem. A pencil-thin line encircling a wide band of white. In the center, the same words I'd been repeating to myself all day. What begins as white that man has made black? I knew. Didn't I? It was plain to me. God. White wasn't a color, but the light. Black wasn't a color, but darkness. The answer to the riddle was God. We had made God, the Creator, our origin, like us, subject to the knowledge of good and evil. Peace and disruption, love and hate, mercy and revenge. But that wasn't who he was. God wasn't white or black. He was infinite. Look to the light. Don't be afraid of the shadow it creates. Vlad, the shadow, had unwittingly played a role in leading me to the light. Return to the truth of your origin. Vlad's hot breath was in my ear, smelling of dirty socks. One way or the other, you will write me into your dreams so I can finish what I was made to do, you sick little puke. The only question is how many bodies I'm going to have to step over. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Vlad was that shadow. Only a shadow. But suddenly I was afraid. What if I was wrong? Trembling, I reached for the pen with my left hand, but at the same time I moved my right hand over the emblem, then slowly lowered my palm to the circle. Origin, I breathed. Origin is infinite. At first, nothing happened. And I thought I'd been wrong. But I knew, deeper than my bones, that even if I had the words wrong, I was right. The white circle under my hand began to glow, bright like the sun. I could see it between my spread fingers. The glowing circle winked out, and a rush of power surged up my arm, then into my mind, where it exploded like a star. I gasped. My whole body shook, too frail to contain the staggering power flowing through me, even though that power was only a thimbleful in an endless ocean made of light. I knew that, like I knew my source, my God, my Father, my origin, my infinite. Uncompromised, unthreatened by anything, ever. This was my Father. I had never upset him. My knowing of him in that way flooded me with a raw love for him that erupted from every cell in my body, defying all I had known of him up until that point. I couldn't breathe. The book was pulled out from under my hand and the light vanished, leaving me standing with my back to the audience and Vlad towering over me. The residents of Eden couldn't possibly know what had just happened, or if anything had happened. But I was swimming in an infinite ocean of light, aware of my origin for the first time in my life. To me, everything had just happened. So, then, Vlad was saying, gently closing the book, "The battle begins." I looked up and met his eyes. They weren't filled with anger or bitterness. They were completely expressionless, like a dead man's eyes, which was worse. I knew he hadn't seen the glowing circle, but they'd all heard my gasp and seen me shake as the power rushed through me. Vlad faced his confused audience. "What sight I gave her, I now take from you," he said. "Your fate is now entirely in Rochelle's hands." The lights went out on cue. Cries of alarm filled the room. Shadow Man was casting his darkness over Eden, and that shadow was pitch black. I moved then, spinning and clicking to find my way. People were shouting in the darkness, groping along the pews. I had to reach my father before they blocked the aisles and I lost sight of his form. "Rochelle?" It was him, calling in a panic. I sprinted down the center aisle, dodging three people, and got to my father just as he was stepping into the aisle, pulling Miranda with him. "Hurry!" I cried, grabbing his hand. "We have to get out." I led him out the back, easily navigating my way through the door, across the foyer, and out into the moonless night. We hesitated at the top steps. Eden was dark. Not a light could be seen. Heavy clouds covered most of the sky, leaving only a few pinprick stars to the east. "We have to get you to safety," my father said. "I don't know exactly what happened in there, but I don't think you won any friends." I looked to my right, and could see just the images of my father and Miranda beside me. It wasn't the starlight that gave me that sight, or any clicking. It was the slight glow from my arm. I reached across with my left hand and pulled up my sleeve. A wide white ring had appeared on my right shoulder, just inside the black circle. Not a flat white ring on my skin, but one that had depth, set deep into my flesh, more like a brand than a tattoo. My heart was slamming against my ribcage. I touched the ring, perfectly smooth. Other Earth was real. All of it. I had to sleep so that I could dream. Talia would know what I should do now. I had to show Talia. "What in the world is that?" Miranda asked. I quickly lowered my sleeve. "The first seal," I breathed, then hurried down the stairs, clicking for good measure. "Slow down," my father said. But of course, they could hardly see. "Where are you going?" "Home," I said. "I have to dream." Chapter 14. The first seal was on my arm, and Vlad Smith had just made me enemy number one. Until I wrote him into the book of history, Eden would be without the electrical power they treasured. By not writing in the book, I was causing a crisis, just as Justin had said. But he'd said it as if that crisis would extend far beyond Eden. I had to find out what to do. From Talia. Which meant I had to dream.